Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know, where we chat all things musical theatre. We have our returning guest today, Christopher Batkin. Hello, Chris.
What's up?
What's up with you? Welcome back to the table.
Hey.
It's going to be very exciting. Yeah. I'm excited to talk about the show that you brought me. And obviously, it's not just me, KB, here to talk to you with Chris. We've also got Julie.
Oh, hey.
Hey, Julie.
You didn't say my full name today. Usually you say my full name.
I know, yeah. I do, but I'm a bit tired, I'm not going to lie.
So. It's long. It takes some time.
We've only got a certain amount of minutes for every podcast episode, and we just didn't have the time.
All right, fair point.
Chris, sorry, I cut you off.
You
were very sorry. You have brought The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, to us today. But before we get into the show, this is your third visit back to the podcast, which means we changed things up a bit here in this section at the beginning. And you no longer have to tell us all the things that would mean getting to know you because we already know you.
Yeah.
So Julie and I now have to cast you in some shows. That is the rule now. So you get a break. You get to sit back, relax, and just take the information in, you know.
Sweet.
Tell us if you agree or disagree with our casting choices.
All right.
You know. Julie, what would you cast Chris Batkin in?
I see what you did there.
Yeah. I mean, I've written some down, so I just want to see if you
have some options. I would say Seymour Crelborn.
Oh, yeah.
Little okay. Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
And now it's your turn.
All right. Here we go. Zane and I did discuss this prior to the show, so I did have
also
a little bit of help.
Also seems rude.
So we came up with Batboy in Batboy.
Yeah, right.
You know, could be fun. I think you'd make a really good Monty Navarro in Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder.
Oh.
You know, I think
what
you'd
a protagonist. This is cool. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah. I know it's not the huge for you, Chris, but I think you'd be good at it. And also like Jekyll and Hyde in Jekyll and Hyde.
No, we've got to come back to that horrible burn. That was all right. Okay, sorry, I'm back. All right.
You get cast in a lot of dark roles, you know?
It's true.
I've got all the opposite, though.
You've got a lot of dark roles. And I haven't gone beyond the dark roles until we get to Igor and Young Frankenstein. Just because, like, you're very good at comedy. It's been a while since we've been able to see you in, like, a really funny, just, like, sidekicky role, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true.
So it's time to, I think, get you back in there.
get my back in there?
Get just your back. No, just
there's a lot of back game. Acting in that role.
I could also see you, although you may have already played this role. I don't know your back catalog.
The back catalog. Yeah, good one.
Pierpont Finch.
I mean, you
Finch.
Didn't play that role in the show, but
who did you
could.
Play?
I was from.
I also like love that costume.
He was very good.
The louder, less attractive version of J. Pierpont Finch.
Aw, harsh.
I mean, it's true. He discusses. He doesn't get away with anything that Finch does, primarily because just everyone's like, I don't like that guy.
Something about that guy.
He's got too much gel in his hair or whatever.
He wears an apron,
decided.
So like, whatever.
He does wear an apron.
J. Pierpont doesn't wear an apron.
He does a little.
He does for a little bit, yeah. But then he
Red
moves up
second.
In the world. No. Look, why not? Why not just like do a rotation of every role in How to Succeed?
Oh man, you know? I would.
You'd be a
that would be
Rosemary.
Awesome actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are like a few shows I'd want to do that for. This might just become a new one that I'd recommend.
Yeah. Just look for it.
Just
you've
everyone.
Already done.
Yeah.
Ooh, Hedy. It's going to be good.
All the appropriate roles.
I mean, it depends what kind of show's audience you're doing.
All the listeners should know that they both just like did the shrug in the exact same way at the exact same time.
We've been it's working like together emojis. For a long time.
Look, it's true. Julie and I have worked together for a really long time. And we've known you for a really long time. So we're glad that we got to cast you in some roles before we talk about The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical. Let's play that music, Zane. Chris, before we get into all of the things that we need to know about The Lightning Thief, I need you to give me a 2-minute plot summary of the show.
Okay.
Okay. Julie,
hang on,
ready?
I had a timer on with... for 10 minutes.
No.
My pizza in for 10 minutes. Hang on, just scroll it down to the top. No notifications. All right.
Are you ready? All right. 3, 2, 1.
All right. Percy Jackson is a half-blood, which means half-god, half-mortal. One day when he does not realize this yet, he is attacked by a monster on a school field trip and as a result is expelled from school. And he sort of gets an inkling that there's maybe some magic going on in the world. He goes home, has a talk with his mum and stepdad, who's awful.
And stinky.
And stinks terribly. And you wouldn't think that would be a plot point, but it is. he goes with his mum to visit the beach where she met his father, and they talk about the father and how he's never been around since Percy was born, and that Percy's special and destined for great things, but she refuses to explain why, which is a little frustrating for Percy and me as the audience member. Then they are attacked by a minotaur, Percy's best friend Grover comes to the rescue. He's been in there a little bit so far, but I forgot to mention him.
Not like the puppet Grover.
I know, no, like Super Grover does come to
he
mind.
He does have like fur, so kind maybe of. We could put him in. Who knows? They fight off the Minotaur. Percy's mum is killed or dissolves into a mist. Percy attacks the Minotaur, beats it, but passes out. Wakes up at a place called Camp Half-Blood.
30 seconds remaining.
Oh, boy.
Oh, wow.
It's based on an entire novel, you guys.
You're doing really well.
All right. So they wake up. He meets... there's just so many characters I've already skipped over.
He meets a lot of people. Sons and daughters
and,
of gods.
He finds out that because he is the son of Poseidon, god of the ocean and a bunch of other stuff, the Greek gods are all very multi-talented. Because he's the son of Poseidon, he's being blamed for stealing Zeus's thunderbolt and has to go on a quest to prove that it was actually Hades who stole the thunderbolt.
And I'm going to give you more time.
That was Act 1, and I didn't mention any of the side characters. Oh,
you're good.
Boy.
You're doing good. So they go on this quest.
They go on the quest with Percy,
Annabeth,
and Grover. They fight a bunch of Greek monsters and challenges, and they finally make it all the way to Hades in the underworld, where it's revealed that it was all a plot to get Percy to deliver both the thunderbolt and some cool flying shoes the Titan whose name is
Cronus.
Cronus, yes, thank you. To free Cronus from the pit where he's been imprisoned. He escapes the pit without being dragged in, which is great. They have a confrontation with Hades and also Ares, who was also behind the plot because he's the god of war and he likes watching gods go to war. He finds that fun, and also I think he was going to gain some power out of the whole thing. They resolve all of the arguments. They prove that Percy was innocent the whole time, and then go back to Camp Half-Blood, where another character I didn't mention. This is awful, guys.
You're doing so well.
We're going to mention Luke.
Who was sort of like a friend and mentor to Percy because he's a little bit older and more knowledgeable, was also secretly plotting to cause the war, and he stabs Percy in the back, literally, with a knife, and escapes. And they realize that despite all their best efforts, the war still might happen, and they have to get prepared, and Percy decides, instead of staying there to train with everyone, he's going to meet the problems head on and go out into the real world where there will be monsters and challenges, but he's feeling more ready now to face that. The end.
Seems like a terrible idea.
Look, for him to go back into life. Well, look, he's got a newfound confidence. He knows why he's a little bit weird, you know? Like,
confidence isn't everything. But
he knows that his stepdad's only around to mask his scent from the monsters.
Oh, yeah. Why. And he gives his mum one of the head of Medusa so that if the stepdad gets out of line, she can just, like, turn him to stone.
Yeah. The head of
the whole head?
The whole head. That's the thing. It's like Percy, I think we see throughout this whole show and kind of the movie, assume the book, is that, because that's the only one I haven't encountered yet.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen the movie, so we're sort of like
the movies
a fun
are trash.
Compliment.
Yeah. So, yeah. is that Percy, without any training or any knowledge of how to do what he should be able to do, is able to just do things. He's able to fight off Furies and Medusa, and it just kind of happens for him. And then he discovers he's the son of Poseidon, and it all kind of makes sense to him. This show started off Broadway.
Yes.
And then made its Broadway debut eventually with pretty much the same cast as it has.
Minus Grover. Yeah.
Yeah, George Salazar. Who you might have heard on the Be More Chill soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Because the show was also directed by Stephen Brackett, who directed Be More Chill. So there's a few like little links to shows that, well, Chris has just done, for one. Well, since you are the one that brought us The Lightning Thief, let's make that comparison. It was nominated for 3 Drama Desk Awards in 2017. Outstanding Musical, Outstanding Book, and Outstanding Featured Actor for George Salazar. He was the only one to get a mention. But when it went to Broadway, there's only 7 actors in the whole show. There's 4 swings that understudy if they need to, but there's 7 actors in the whole show, double casted, casting roles, and
it's the best
just
kind of
running,
show.
Running
it's
all
the
over
best
the place.
Kind of show. Yes.
Which is crazy. I think it makes it a lot of fun. But it was the Broadway debut for all of them except for Chris McCarroll, who played Percy Jackson. He had been on Broadway before, so that's cool too. You know, like a new show with a new cast. It's just kind of fresh. But is there a particular reason you wanted to talk about The Lightning Thief, Chris?
Oh man. So one, I just like really enjoyed listening to the album. I find it like a lot of fun. It's very high energy.
It's what the children would call a bop.
It is a bop.
It is a
bop.
Bop. Oh god, I almost couldn't say that.
But you did.
Weird.
One more time for the audience.
It's a bop, you
there
guys.
There we go. Do you know what? I did meet a teenager this week who was like, I love musical theater. I was like, that's amazing. What's your favorite show at the moment? And she's like, The Lightning Thief. And I was like, I just listened to that soundtrack. It's so good. She's like, it's a total bop. And I was like, it is a total bop. So it's true. The teens do believe
it's a bop.
It is a bop.
Really cool. All right. So we're using the right language. That's good to know.
We are definitely not
Hello,
old. But it was fun to have that conversation in the week that I had been introduced to The Lightning Thief.
Yeah.
Because the soundtrack is awesome. Do you have a favorite song?
I mean, I do like the opening number.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really cool. It's sort of like, it comes in with this really quick, like, this is the show. This is what the show's about. It does it in like 30 seconds. Like, the gods are real. They have kids. Those kids have issues. And that's like... all the background information you need. And then Percy Jackson comes on and just starts narrating and talking to the audience, which is fun.
Yeah.
And sort of like jumping back in and out of like the story. And yeah, it's just like a lot of fun. I think that's a really great one. I like Good Kid.
Yeah.
Which is like Percy's big like I Want song,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of weird because it happens sort of late in the show. Like it's like this...
just before.
It's like the last song before the end of Act 1 or the last song before the end of Act 1 song.
the second last song of Act 1.
That's the way that I said it, but with less words. Well done. Yeah,
I really like The Tree on the Hill, and I don't know whether it's because it's Grover's song and he has been so like he is the comic relief throughout, particularly for that trio where Annabeth is very like, I'm the Wonder Woman of this group and you don't know what you're doing, and he's just like, I'm here to support everyone, but then him singing this like beautiful ballad of just being like, I made a mistake, is so nice in amongst all of the other really upbeat.
And it comes right after Drive too, which is like where he shows off that in song as well. So it's like he's like like, I'm going to be the heart of the team, keep everyone moving, and we're not going to stop till we get to the end, and it's going to be great. And then, like, you know, nightfall, we sleep and have a conversation.
No, nothing good.
And, like,
comes
it just shows a great, yeah. Sometimes the bad thing that comes after 2 a.m. is a Medusa.
It's a Medusa. Yeah.
I had a realization driving here listening to the campfire song. Yeah. I was listening to that song and it got up to the part about Aries.
Yes.
And I drove past a WandaVision sign.
Yeah.
And I got irrationally mad that whenever female superheroes or female women's, like, in battle are shown, they have their hair out. No, it's just not a thing. If you've got long hair, you've got it tied up for war.
I mean, Ares' daughter does, what is it, rock a plait in the musical. So maybe they've worked
correct,
that out.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You would have your hair plaited. Potentially a tight bun.
Maybe like a sharp rock at the end of it so you can, like, swing it around and hit people in the face.
Now that's thinking.
There you go. Yeah.
That's
we'll let the superheroes know for next time. See what happens. We'll get Marvel on the phone.
We might have to, though.
We might have to. There is a few. There's not a very extravagant set. I feel like there's probably more to it than it probably needs. For me, watching it, I was like, a lot of this is unnecessary. I get why there's a fridge on stage, but we could have done with something else. But the puppetry from off-Broadway into Broadway stepped up massively.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so there is a bootleg flying around
on
the internet.
What are you talking
about?
If
you can find it, from the off-Broadway version. And the production still...
I was just going to say that I went back in time to catch it.
They should have went back in time to catch it.
Yeah, that's what I always like. Yeah, it was a time portal. It was a little wobbly, so you couldn't really
see all
of the action.
Yeah, there's sometimes a bit of a... Something puts... Like, you get a blindfold on your face sometimes.
That's just the time
stream,
you know?
What happens.
Yeah,
you might be able to find it if you're super smart. And the production still. So the between the bootleg of the off-Broadway version and the production stills of the Broadway version, the puppetry is fantastic. Like, it has become an actual center point, I think, of the show, to be able to show this magical world that we can't really, it's not realistic enough for us to do it without puppetry or visual design.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is why you're so excited that it's been released very recently for amateur rights and children's theatre.
Yes, it's going to be great high school productions of it all over the place. Yeah. We know we're going to have little, like, grade sevens in onesies running around the stage as a mentor.
I was actually just thinking about this yesterday, that I reckon at some point, because there's a character in the show, Chiron, who's a centaur, and or centaur.
Mm-hmm.
Both pronunciations are fine. I think I'm morally in the clear here.
I mean, they're mythical creatures, so they're not real.
He's a centaur. And I think the off-Broadway and both the Broadway just sort of show that by giving him a horse tail.
Yes,
and
I didn't like that.
But I was like, I bet at some point some school production is going to make another actor be his butt.
Yes.
And they're going to give him like a full two-person horse outfit.
Yeah.
And someone's going to be like, I was Chiron's butt.
For
not
a
show.
Nailed it.
I had wanted the, because they just kind of gave him brown trousers, which I'm like, fine. And the actor's very good at pretending his legs are horse legs. But because they've given Grover, like, goat legs, I would have thought they could have given him horse legs.
Maybe. Yeah.
You know, it was just like, there were some bits of the design that I was a little bit confused by. There are a few directional choices that I was like, we're just going to keep with choice. That was a choice. But the cast is fantastic. And I'm really sad that it had such a good, I don't know, reputation as an off-Broadway show. The reviews were very good for it, and then it transferred to Broadway, and the reviews, so I have some good reviews before we get into bad reviews with Julie, because I think it needs to, like, counterbalance some of the stuff that was said.
Good reviews with Astrid as well.
Good reviews with Astrid, of course.
We can bookend that at the end of the bad review.
Yeah. So for the off-Broadway production, it was in the Huffington Post, and The Lightning Thief was praised for its dialogue, story, and cast, calling it a reminder that off-Broadway is an important venue for musicals, while Time Out described it as worthy of the gods. When The Hollywood Reporter put out its review, it said, proves far more enjoyable than the misbegotten 2010 film version or its 2013 sequel, and also provides an excellent, if irreverent, introduction to Greek Greek mythology that just might persuade some kids to dig deeper. And I think that's true. Yeah. Like, having watched the off-Broadway version, it is very good, and I'm sure the book does the same thing of, like, being like, oh, if they're demigods and she's Athena's daughter and he's Poseidon's son, like, what else? Like, what is, like, Hercules, of course, for us, kind of do the same thing. Whereas I think the lightning thief introduces this particular generation into to the Greek mythology that maybe stuff at school wouldn't, because it's fun and exciting. And their age, too.
Yeah.
The film versions were not good at all. But let's go into bad reviews. Julie!
Thank you for that beautiful song.
Yeah. Is it the same every time?
No.
Oh, never. Boy.
It has never been the same twice. So this is... I had to sign up to the New York Times to get this review. Ooh. But I read a snippet of it in the Google search and went, well, I have to keep going because this is scathing. This review is by Jesse Green on October 16th, 2019. Here's an idea for a Broadway musical. An awkward boy with an absent father and overwhelmed mother gets involved with friends in dubious scheme that spins out of control and almost undoes him. Is it Dear Evan Hansen? If only. Oh. Alas, The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, is a pale patch on the earlier show and a failed attempt to board the teenage fantasy angst train. See also Be More Chill and More Successfully, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Well, that is a controversial opinion, it that is. One.
Based on the popular 2005 novel by Rick Riordan.
I think that's it, yeah.
Is both overblown and underproduced, filled with sentiments it can't support and effects it can't pull off. It needn't have been that way. When first mounted by TheatreWorks in 2014, The Lightning Thief was by most accounts charming, a low-tech 60-minute romp for preteens. Its minimal production values and matching ticket prices suited a tale that was, at heart, a light-hearted fable about the half-blood son of a sea god, Poseidon, and a mortal woman. Translated from ancient Greece to contemporary New York, the tale drew its dry humor from the contrast. And here's where he gets real nasty.
This is where he gets real nasty.
Yeah.
The current version, which opened at the Longacre Theatre on Wednesday after a seven month national tour earlier this year, has all the charm of attention headache. To disguise its ineptness for Broadway, the original creative team, Joe Tracks?
I think it's Trace.
Trace. I like that. Rob Rakic. Oh, are you kidding me with these names, people?
You can do this, truly.
Rob Kiki and Stephen Brackett has doubled its length, added a clutch of unnecessary songs, and generally inflated the material so hard that it explodes whatever mild pleasures made the book worth adapting in the first place. He goes on.
Oh, boy.
Quite a bit. Look. And I mean, like, a lot. I highly recommend. Worth signing up.
Julie will screen record that article so we can all read it.
He had some strong opinions.
He did have some very strong. And look, I'm definitely, I like people with strong opinions.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be friends.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be friends. But... I do think it is an interesting show to have transitioned to Broadway from, like, there are lots of shows, obviously, that have a lot of success on off-Broadway that then transfer very successfully to Broadway. But this is a very small show with mm-hmm. a very, for the bigger stage, simple-ish set. And a lot of it which isn't utilized, I don't think, or is only there for aesthetic. So to have scaffolding and then the Greek pillars yeah. behind it when you're like, could we have maybe figured this out in a more simple way?
But could we maybe have made the pillars out of scaffolding?
Yeah. Or like put the scaffolding in between, or like there was I think there was just a lot of mixed. I know they were trying to go for a quirky New York theme.
I just really enjoy stuff like that. I find it fun when it's like everything sort of like feels improvised and like grabbed from somewhere. It kind of like, I get the fun of like watching a show, but also like the also the fun of couldn't think of a better word, of like watching like a really well rehearsed like dress rehearsal, because it feels like everyone's just sort of running in and running out, and they, you know, someone's got to like run off and grab their thing, and they have like one line, and they're like, I don't remember any of the lines well enough to just yell one, but like they come on and they do their thing and then they run off again, and everything just feels like it's constantly moving.
It does have that like Jersey Boys feel to it in that sense, where there's constantly things being rolled on, constantly things being rolled off. But I don't know. I feel like the set reminded me a lot of like your Next to Normals, and I just feel like we'd seen it before. And for a show that is quite epic in its storyline, I think they either needed to go more minimalistic or more epic. They sat in this like weird
in between.
Not even quite in between, you know? Like it just, I wasn't sure why, I guess.
Set design because limbo.
The show was very good. I really enjoy the show. I really enjoy the soundtrack.
So did I.
Which is rare. So, like, if Julie enjoyed it, we know that she sat through the whole thing and was like, I'm not going to turn this off.
I'm not going to hate this. I'm not going to actively hate this.
Yeah.
We do have a good review. Good review from Miranda's niece, Astrid. So she's a massive, massive fan. She's read the books. She says the movies don't exist. Never happened. Don't know what you're talking about. So her review, the songs are good. The songs are funny. I especially like the campfire song and Lost. Astrid, age 11.
Thank you, Astrid, so much. She's right. And there's so much dialogue that is hilarious in this. And it's in the delivery of just like that slight pause before her delivery, or the just circumstantial comedy that comes out of a show about demigods in contemporary New York City on a quest, you know, where hell is through a record store, and like
they get on a bus and it's boarded by three old ladies who are really monsters in disguise.
Exactly.
And then the bus explodes. Funny stuff.
Sorry, team. Need a drink of water. We are going from there to talk about the lessons we have learnt from The Lightning Thief. Now, for some of us, this may be a lesson of Greek mythology.
It was!
Yes!
I didn't know half of that Greek mythology.
That I think often we can forget that Poseidon is in there with Zeus and Hades, you know? That there is the three of them.
Powerful guy.
Powerful guys. But I think this show is a big lesson, particularly for teens, in courage and teamwork, and not always needing to know exactly where you've come from in order to forge your own path ahead, you know? And identity, and how to search for your own identity when you're not really sure where you fit in.
Yeah. And also just like trying to figure out exactly how you want your relationship with your parents to be.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of like a lot of the kids have like very different relationships with their godly parent. Mm-hmm. And then, but they're all like at least at the beginning fairly like simple, whereas Percy's kind of like evolves over the course of the thing. Annabeth is eventually convinced to like maybe give living with her dad another go, like her mortal dad, and sort of see where that, like if things have changed over the fort. She's been stuck at camp, never leaving. And Luke, obviously, his is changed for the worse, because he just suddenly, he gets, like over the course of getting to know his dad, he like gets violently opposed to him and just wants to like burn it all down to punish, you know, these people who he thinks have abandoned. Yeah. And so it's like, you know, you just get all these different views of how to interact with like, you know, the older generation.
Yeah.
You know whose description really tickled me pink?
Uh-oh. Who?
Aphrodite. Because in my head I'm like, I really want the person playing Aphrodite to be Jennifer Coolidge. Because I think that is so funny in contrast.
Oh, you never actually get to see most of the godly parents.
Which is still funny.
You just get like her picture flat up like, on the wall. Like
projected on the back screen.
Where she's just like talking to her kids' dates.
Yeah. Hilarious, is it not?
It would be quite funny. It would be quite funny.
I love a bit of Jennifer Coolidge.
We have learnt that Julie likes Jennifer Coolidge from Percy Jackson's musical. Fun fact. I think that is massive. And that your relationship with your parents doesn't also define who you are, or it can completely define who you are, but you choose. Because we don't really ever hear about Luke's mortal mother. He's only ever focused on Hermes as his father being not good enough.
Also not in at least the first book either. He never mentions it.
I might need to read these books.
I read the first one. Like, it knocked it out in like a couple of days last week. Like, it's like a quick...
I
can read fast. Oh, man. Never met a text I can't devour in a couple hours.
It is interesting. I think the review brought up Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. And there's a lot in a book to musical adaptions or book to play adaptions. And a lot of people would not agree that Harry Potter and the Cursed Child was a good translation of the Harry Potter universe into a play. Whereas I think that the Lightning Thief has done a really good job of trying to fit an entire book into like an hour 20.
It's a good effort, and like there's also it's actually funny you mention Harry Potter, because it kind of reminds me a little bit of the parody musical.
Yes.
In the sense that like it's got that same like everyone running off and on kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like got the three leads that perform very similar roles, but like where this is like a faithful adaptation. Obviously the Harry Potter one was like a parody with like everyone's speaking American and enjoying red vines and whatever. But like it has that sort of same feel. So it's like, you know, you can like make these interesting adaptations. You just sort of have to decide like what aspects of the story you're going to focus on. And like it seems like the movie might have like done a lot of like the battles and the all of the action sequences and things like that, whereas the musical is obviously focused on, because it can't do like huge monsters, or at least not many of them, it's sort of focused on the characters and like the road trip aspect of the whole thing.
Yeah, and it's self-aware enough to know that it's turning an epic Greek mythology-esque story into a musical. Yeah. And it does make reference to that a couple of times, very flippantly. You'd miss it if you weren't paying attention. But I think that self-awareness of knowing that what they're doing is quite large scale in comparison to how they're doing it is also what makes it work.
Self-aware enough to go, hey, this is a 28-year-old playing a teenager.
Yes. For me, I also learned, and I guess I always learn this in shows that I would want to be a part of in some way or another, is I think it's so important for every aspect of a show to work together to tell that story. And for me, I have obviously made it very clear that some of the set and direction didn't do that for me. That's just my own individual opinion. But how key it is for all of that to be as important as what the actors are doing on stage. Because it's such a fast pace show that I think everything has to be working to make it. So any other lesson?
And I'm going to dwell too much on this, but I learned that the Tony Award people hate teens.
Oh, yes. Please tell us more, Christopher.
Because
Duncan.
Of the four shows that were up for Tony nominations during this performance season, this one got no nominations for anything.
No.
And it was an outrage. And I want everyone involved with Percy Jackson. No. I want everyone involved with The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, to know that I'm outraged on your behalf. And I think that it was a travesty.
I am surprised that like the actors, at least, or the book or the score didn't get a mention. Like,
yeah, and it's telling, I think, because there were sort of two shows with heavy male leads, as in this one and Moulin Rouge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, the worst.
And there were two with sort of more female leads, one of which was the Tina Turner biopic. Do you still call it a pic if it's not a picture?
Biomusical.
Yeah. Oh, I like the extra E on the end. That's very cool. And another one that I can't remember. But
it's
like,
all right. It's been a year.
Aaron Tveit is the only person nominated for Best Actor in a Leading Role in a Musical for that season.
And he still might not win.
Yeah. Yeah, that's yeah. But like the when with the other two shows, there were like maybe I think three nominees for.
Oh, it's Jagged Best. Little Pill.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's the one. Yeah, so there were like a perfectly regular amount for almost all of the other
categories.
And just like it just feels like someone has gone through and just excised Percy Jackson over and over again from all of these lists, and
which is crazy,
very unfortunate.
If I had to guess, I would say it'd be that guy from the New York Times.
It would probably
be like, more powerful than you'd think, huh?
I mean, the New York Times is the one that everyone kind of waits for, you know, that makes or breaks your show. But Chris McCarroll's voice is phenomenal. Like, some of those notes he just seems to effortlessly be able to sing at the top of his lungs. And I think he does give, as someone who is a very big Aaron Tveit fan, a run for his money, because for an he sings basically nonstop for an entire show.
Oh, he, yeah, that guy, like, I feel like I want to say literally never leaves the stage.
No.
Like, once he's not in the first 30 seconds of the show when they're introducing the premise, and then he comes on stage, like, does a knee slide straight to center, and then from then on he's just, like, on for the rest of the show.
Yeah, he never, like, so much so that there's a water bottle in his prop backpack.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way that's going to happen for him.
And beyond that, there's, like, again, like you said, like, seven actors in this whole thing.
Yeah.
And they do what took Hollywood like $10 billion to like make this cool adventure story happen with like seven people.
Yeah.
And I just think that is noteworthy.
Absolutely.
And it should have been
noted. Yes.
Yeah.
Tonys, you've heard it here.
Coming for you, Tony.
If you need some extra people that for
is
that
your
panel,
real name.
You can find Chris back in here in Brisbane. But yes, I think you're right. But I think a lot of the smaller shows that do that are often overlooked by Tonys, which is unfortunate, especially when there's only one person for nominated in a category, guys. Get your act together. But talking of cast, should we cast this ourselves?
Yes.
Alrighty, guys. Firstly, where are we putting Zac Efron?
Where are we putting Zac
Efron? I'd put him in Luke Aries' role.
Yeah, I think that's probably wise.
You know?
Okay.
You know? Okay. Like, I'm not going to put him as Percy. He's not Percy. But I could see him as a Luke.
Yeah, I think he could play, like, cool, older mentor.
Yeah.
And also, like, just super aggressive dude in Aries' character. And then, what else does he do?
Gabe.
Yeah, yeah.
Gabe. Good old Gabe. The
good old Gabe.
Stepdad.
Yeah.
So he could be a bit smelly for a bit. So who would we who would we cast as Percy Jackson? The lightning. No, he's not the lightning thief. Spoilers.
Oh, man. I mean, you might have to spoil it because I just did such a poor job of spoiling it before. Who knows if people really understood what this story is about. The other thing that I thought of would be fun is just if you got literally the Harry Potter parody musical cast and just stuck them into
so, like, Darren Criss as Percy. Yeah. Oh, my goodness, I've forgotten their names.
Can't help you.
Oh. Yeah, no, I...
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, Darren Criss is not the only person I should remember. A Harry Potter musical cast. I would like to see Jordan Fisher as Percy. He was playing Evan in Dear Evan Hansen.
Yep.
He's in a couple of movies, like To All the Boys I Loved Before, sequel, whatever that's called. P.S. I Still Love You.
Hang on a second.
Yeah.
God, those titles are long.
They are long. Joey Richter played Ron. He'd be a great Grover.
Yeah.
And where is our Hermione?
I think, and also everyone.
I mean, Lauren.
You would have to like lose a lot of the double casting, obviously, to fit everyone in. But Joey Richter should definitely still keep his double casting of Dionysus. I think he would nail that.
He would be very good. I also had Harvey Guillen. He currently plays George in Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. He was Zach in The Internship. He has a very Josh Gad vibe.
The vibe.
He has a vibe, but he's just really sweet to watch, and obviously he can sing. He's in Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist.
Can I have Tom Holland
as
Percy?
Sure.
Thank you.
It's your your dream cast. I want that.
Whatever you can imagine.
It's so pretty.
You can imagine. I would like to see Audra McDonald in the Sally Jackson Oracle role.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, bring in cool. The wise Audra.
Producer Zane agrees.
Yes, yep. Yes.
Yep. I'm happy with that.
And
then just randomly her, like, one teen role. Yeah. As, like, the daughter of Aphrodite.
That's it. I think she'd be great. And Christian Ball as Mr. B, Poseidon, Hades, and Medusa. With that voice.
Yeah, this is...
That's a new one. And I threw in Zendaya as Annabeth because I think she could rock it.
Mm, yeah.
I think it's a really tough role because it goes between kind... It leans into sweet before it goes like... She's just tough.
Yeah.
You know, you get this little glimpse and then she pulls herself back. I think she'd be great at that. Any other casting?
I mean, I've got my main two in there.
Tom Holland and Zac Efron?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Who else could we see in the...
Oh, we just haven't gotten anyone for Clarice yet.
Clarice.
Totally skipped.
Clarice is the daughter of Ares. Mm. She's got a
And also Mrs. Dodds.
She does. She plays the teacher that isn't actually apparently there because she's actually a fury.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah.
Oh, makes sense.
His teacher was a creature, then she vanished in the ether with a demon scream.
If you think I understand... anything.
Julie just learned.
One of my favorite lyrics. It's great.
Who would we see as Mrs. Dodds meets Clarice? Or two separate actresses?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm actually stumped. Which means I feel bad because I brought this up. And
I mean, I could see like an Anna Kendrick playing Clarice, you know?
I'll take it.
You know?
As long as I can have my projection of Jennifer Coolidge.
You can have whatever you want in your own dream show of The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, Julie. That's why it's a dream.
Dreamcast.
All right, let's go on to top fives then. Guys, if you have any suggestions for our other cast members, you just let us know. I'm going to put it on top five mythology musicals.
Yeah.
Name the other five.
Forum, maybe, in there. It's Greek Hades Town, obviously.
Actually, forms a nice compliment. They don't sort of overlap a lot of their characters by being about Greek mythology.
Yeah, they've done well. Look, I'm sure there's more, but we'll play that game when we get to it. top five musicals for the youth is what I've titled it.
It is like certainly one of those like aggressively for teens shows, I think.
I don't feel awful watching it. Like,
no, I loved it, which means that it's definitely good for teenagers because all I watch is teenage drama and rom-coms. So. Yeah.
Particularly because like it's...
it's funny because it's
all
true.
Like all from Percy's perspective. Like, yeah. So like he never leaves because it's just like his story. Like even like Dear Evan Hansen and stuff is also about like motherhood and being a good dad. And so like this one's just like, I'm a half-blood. Everything's terrible.
I'm an angsty teen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Top five musicals that teens would describe as a bop.
Name four more, Julie.
SpongeBob. Ugh, awful, but I guess.
Our producer Zane has brought SpongeBob to the table and we will throw it in there. Not very willingly. Top five small cast musicals.
Ooh, that is a
I mean,
big I know
list.
It's a big one.
That's a big call.
There's a lot.
I don't know. Not for me. Not for me personally.
Not for you personally?
No.
I guess it would depend on how you describe a small cast too, because it's seven.
There
so
is seven.
There's which like is quite, there's like quite
like
a few.
Ten and under.
Ten and under.
That's
quite a lot of shows, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think it's quite good. Like I would watch this now before I watched Next to Normal again, you know?
Wow. Dang. Big call.
I know it's a big call.
Really big call.
Yeah.
Would you watch this before you watched... No, I'm out.
Good. Well done, Julie. This was an excellent audio.
Counted the characters as I said it.
I mean, yeah. Any other top fives, guys?
Top five, like, aggressive use of double cast roles.
Yeah. Some of these actors are playing 3, 4, 5 roles. And, like, shows like Jersey Boys does the same thing where that cast is just running the whole time into quick changes and set changes. And Percy Jackson is no different.
Yeah.
That is, it's an epic show. You'd lose so much weight doing that show. Just be constantly
and then you'd
moving.
Have to fix your costumes.
And then you'd constantly be adjusting it. Top five shows to have to adjust costumes.
And yet.
Any other top fives, guys?
I think like top five high intensity shows. Mm-hmm. Like it definitely feels like there's so little downtime for like, I don't know, like they stop occasionally for like their one, each character sort of got their one song. Mm-hmm. And then everything else is just like running around and like getting in buses that explode and yes. fighting monsters. And cool. Oh, that's good. That I like, yeah, top five use of like special effects and puppetry.
Yeah, I think I was just thinking that is that there are a lot of shows with puppetry in them, but I would definitely put this ahead of The Lion King with how outdated that show has become. Like,
big call.
It is a big call. That is a big call. But I think it's because I came very late to The Lion King game. I saw it as a fully grown adult that was just like, oh boy, we needed to update this show 10 years ago.
Guess who's never seen The Lion King?
So big call from Julie actually means I'm not sure if I can agree or not.
I quite like the puppets in the
Lion. Yes. They were amazing for when the show first came out, but I'm just saying as time goes on.
Time after time.
Yes, special effects. And like not necessarily the kind of special effects that are like, say, in Harry Potter, but it does very well with the aesthetic that it's chosen.
Yeah,
it's all
like, it's got that same thing where it's like everything sort of feels more improvised. Like I think the wings of the fury are just like bed sheets on like clawed bony skeleton wings.
Yeah.
And like the oracle is like it's like this one's actually kind of weird to me. I'm not sure if I quite liked it as much as I'm about to imply that I did, but like the oracle was like the one woman playing Percy Jackson's mom, and then like everyone was just sort of like underneath her being like, oh, we're the billowy cloak of the oracle, and then it like lifts up and they all just go like, oh yeah, we're in the scene now. It was. I thought that one was kind of weird, but it works like better when you're not traveling through time to catch it.
Uni drama workshop is definitely how. It's like they've just. Yeah. They've. It's the movement piece of their assessment.
Lovely.
And I think that's what's like. I think that's what gives it its charm, though, is that there are those moments where you're like, oh.
Okay. Oh yeah, no, like I'm super about that aesthetic. Like I said earlier, like I find it really fun because you also get that sort of experience of like, oh, how are they going to use that later? Like there's that one light that's just like on the stage for a lot of it, and then they pick it up and it's a motorcycle, and you're like, oh, that's really cool, and they put it down again. You're
like, that's a motorcycle. Yeah. And the fact that it is just like some of the lighting, I guess it's top five uses of unconventional theater lighting, is that you. At least in the bootleg, for some reason, they spin off to the side and then really zoom in on just this like fluoro yellow lighting tree you can buy from Bunnings, like outdoor, like fluoros.
Okay.
That are not on at the time. Mm-hmm. But it's like probably shouldn't just be plugged into the side of the audience there, but that's cool. Like I think that vibe of it all being a group of people that really just freaking loved this story wanted to bring it on stage.
Yeah.
And so they did it, and that's pretty epic.
And that can always go one of two ways.
But I think they've done a good job. It is a very good comparison with a Harry Potter musical, is that I think it will have this cult following of fandom. And I think probably every like 5 to 10 years, it will just like keep popping up again as something that everyone's like, have you seen The Lightning Thief?
I hope so, because that was the other thing that was concerning me with the Tony thing, is that sometimes that can really like extend the life of a show that otherwise might be forgotten if it's like nominated for Tony Awards.
Yeah.
And like I hope that this doesn't like, because it's already like up against a bunch of stuff, like it's based on a book that is like is fairly popular, but it's not like Harry Potter level, like it's a couple steps below. And so I hope that it does have like a life beyond, I don't know, just someone's high school does it every 5 or 10 years. Like I think it would be really like it's really a cool show to like see professionally, I'm sure. And yeah, like fingers crossed that it actually makes it at some point to us in a like a full professional context, because I think that'd be cool.
I think it will be really cool. Guys, if you haven't heard the soundtrack, go and listen to it. It's on Spotify. Yeah. You can find it on the internet. Go for it. Tell your friends about it. Let's be the people that get The Lightning Thief into the professional realm of Australian musical theatre. I know that we're at the beginning of a year, Chris, but do you have anything that you'd like to plug?
Oh, man. I mean, not really.
No. No. You have just done Be More Chill.
Yeah.
You're taking time to rest their voice after a big scene.
Another show where the main character doesn't leave the stage super often.
Yeah.
Which I think is actually kind of a bit of a staple of the genre, honestly, where like the protagonist is like really, really the protagonist. like that and Dear Evan Hansen and Lightning Thief, that sort of like, yeah.
And
like,
all that jazz.
All that jazz.
Another top five list. but no, not much at the moment. Just living my life. Hopefully soon.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting back into the swing of things, so I'm sure there'll be a lot more this year than maybe we saw last year.
All right, I guess, so my Instagram currently doesn't have a lot on it, but if I do get a thing, you know, that'll be where you find out. So that's just at Christopher Batkin.
Amazing. And stay tuned.
Yeah.
Because Chris is going to do some fun things in 2021 and you're going to find it on Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2021. Already so much more fun. All right, guys, if you would like to find us, there are so many places you could do it.
Just so many.
You can find us on Instagram and on Twitter at Musicals Teach Me. You can find us on Facebook at Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know. You could email us at musicalstaughtmepodcast@gmail.com. So old school. I know. Do people email anymore? Is it just Facebook Messenger? I'm not really sure. This is where I'm starting to get a bit old, guys. You know?
Imagine emails being old.
Do people just TikTok each other now? Is that how it works?
I mean, mostly I do that. Oh, yeah.
And if you Zane just like, where is this going?
KB, producer Zane's like,
just stop the recording.
The best way to end the discussion on Lightning Thief. Just being like, what's technology, you guys?
What is technology? No, but you can find us on all of your favorite podcatchers. So don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you would like to see Zane dance the Necronomicon and all the other things,
so close.
And all the other things we've promised that we will do after we get to a certain number of patrons, you can go to patreon.com/musicals taught me everything I know, or you could just wait until next week when a new episode is released and you can hear our voices once again talking nonsense about musical theater.
the best nonsense.
I hope that you guys have enjoyed listening to The Lightning Thief. Chris, thank you so much for coming back.
Oh, it was
the
great
show. Come back anytime. We mean it, obviously. So please do it.
All right. Yeah.
Julie.
Let's do it. Why not?
Thanks,
Katie. Another episode. We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.